This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Stylefile, where we cover everything and anything on the business of fashion. I'm Azura Rahman, and this week we speak to the bubbly duo behind DIY KL, Saren Mutang and Agnes Leong.
You see so many necklaces on the market, and it's a few hundred ringgit to a thousand, when, you know, we can just obviously teach you how to make it, and you can make it your own.
Up next, Maitan Abdullah and I will be going for what's made headlines in the fashion industry.
I can't help but feel a little bit exploited, you know, like, Oh, they've caught on that the Middle East is a huge market, now they're cashing in.
And finally, Emma Chong Johnson of Tanksheet.com will be giving her do's and don'ts on the all-white trend.
There's been a lot of white formal wear. I think you'll have noticed it in like the Raya collections. There were a lot of all-white pieces, which are really beautiful, but yeah, difficult.
First up though, our style makers for this week, DIY KL's Saren Mutang and Agnes Leong. If clothes maketh the man, accessories definitely maketh the outfit. Whether it means jazzing up a plain tee with a statement necklace or adding pearl earrings for some chic finesse, you can never have too many trinkets to help you stretch out your wardrobe that much further. If you are a lover of jewels and baubles, what can be more satisfying than making them yourself? Thanks to DIY KL, you can now create fashion-forward rings and necklaces with their kits and tutorials. I caught up with Saren Mutang and Agnes Leong to find out more about their fledgling label, DIY KL.
I came across DIY KL on Instagram, actually, is how most things are born nowadays. Tell us about the beginning of DIY KL. What made you want to, you know, venture into something like this, and, you know, why DIY?
Okay, so basically, I think since young, we've had our own DIY adventures. You know how your mother passes down all her trinkets. So what I used to do was I used to break them apart and put them back together, revamp it. It went through me until university days, and people used to say, hey, can I have that same thing? And I used to make it for them, but after a while, I decided, why not we just sort of share how to make it, you know, share how to do DIY or do it yourself. So it sort of started from there.
Right. Okay. So you've always made your own jewelry then?
Yeah.
Was it the same for you as well, Agnes?
Yeah, for me, I noticed that whenever I go shopping, the parts are actually all the same. It's just how you put it together that makes the difference. So I started dabbling. And then one day we just decided, you know what, we should be the platform in Malaysia, because this business concept is very popular in US and Europe, but there's none in Malaysia.
Right.
So yeah, we decided to make things simple. Everything will be pre-packed for you. So you just go home and then follow our tutorial step by step, and then you can just create your own necklace, your own bracelets. Yeah.
So it's basically kits that you sell. Do you sell anything that's already complete then?
At this point in time, we're not selling any ready-made because it beats the purpose of DIY. So we actually sell supplies and tools, but at the same time, to make your DIY adventures easier, we actually design certain jewelry kits for like necklaces, earrings, bracelets. We put it all together, and we have a tutorials on our website. So it's super easy for anyone to follow.
Okay, what is the easiest kit so far?
Oh, the easiest one would be our double pearl rings and bangle.
Okay.
Inspired by Chanel and Dior, and, you know, the earrings and stuff. So it's just a piece of wire that we have pre-banded for you, and then you just stick on the pearl into the two ends using glue, and that's it.
Okay, so that takes all of like 5 minutes by the sounds of it.
More like less 2 than minutes.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
What's the most difficult project that you have then?
I think it's probably the Liz Rhinestone bracelet. It's a little bit more intricate and complicated. Probably takes around 20 to 30 minutes to actually make it, but it's really pretty.
Right, okay. So you have the beginner stuff and the more advanced stuff then.
Yeah.
What's been selling really well?
Oh, the double pearl bangle and rings, the Chanel inspired one, because it's just so easy and it looks very expensive.
Yeah.
But it costs like, what, 10 ringgit?
Right, yeah. Okay.
And also our a lot of our tassel earrings are doing pretty well. We're also selling a lot of our rhinestones because everyone loves a lot of variety of colours, so that's flying off the shelf as well.
It gives you an insight as to how much these things actually cost as well,
yes,
at the same time,
exactly,
right? Because you see them in the shops and, you know, sometimes it can cost hundreds of ringgit, even more even.
Yes.
Did it kind of like give you that light bulb moment as well, that, you know, you're not going to buy any of these jewelry anymore?
Definitely. Yeah. Because even rhinestone embellished shirts, they cost over 100 ringgit. When rhinestones, when we sell a pack, is only 5 ringgit.
Right.
It just takes a bit of patience and a bit of creativity. You just need to stitch them on or just glue them on, and you already have a shirt that looks so much more expensive than what you paid for.
So do you see people actually kind of freestyling and, you know, going beyond the designs that you put? Are they putting them on shoes and shirts? And
yeah. So lots of them put it on their bags, put on their shoes, they put on their phones, lots of things, really. I mean, the thing about DIY KL is we give you a platform to sort of DIY, but we don't want you to be confined to our own designs. We want you to be able to have the creativity to sort of personalize and customize it to your own taste and preference.
Okay, you mentioned Chanel for one of the inspirations for one of your kits. Who else do you take inspiration from?
Well, actually for us, we do take some inspiration from the luxury brands, but at the same time, we take inspiration from everything around us. It could be bold colors, it could be beautiful prints, it could be current jewelry that we really, really like. And it's very important that we would wear what we sell. So that is important for us.
Right, which is what you're wearing today. I imagine one of your necklaces. Yes, tell us a bit more about this necklace then.
Okay, this necklace is going to be featured in one of our upcoming DIY workshops. We're thinking of having like a make-your-own DIY statement necklaces. Because, you know, you see so many necklaces on the market and it's a few hundred ringgit to a thousand. When, you know, we can just obviously teach you how to make it and you can make it your own.
And who have been signing up for these classes? Who's your target market?
Target market would be the working ladies, because we have to wear different outfits every single day. And then sometimes you just look at your closet, it's like, okay, I need a new fancy shirt, a fancy blouse, but I don't want to spend that kind of money. Okay, we have chains, we have rhinestones, we have tassels, and simple things that you can just sew on, and this takes, what, maybe half an hour?
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then just step out the door.
Do you find your customers find it quite easy to do these things? Or do they say, oh, I don't know how to sew, I've never picked up a needle before, for example?
Yeah, we have, at bazaars especially. So, no, I can't do this. Can you do this for me? Then we would just...
Can you do this for me?
Yeah. So actually what we do is, no, it's actually very simple. So what we do, we just flash our website. Okay, this is a tutorial, step by step. Then when they look, oh, it's actually quite simple. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go home and try and then take up the challenge. So, and then they will actually send us photos. Oh, look, I made it.
Right. Yeah. Are Malaysians generally quite open to, you know, making your own jewelry, to arts and crafts, even from what you found?
It's a very small market. I mean, it's not a DIY lifestyle.
Yeah.
But what we are trying to do is we will try to bring the lifestyle to Malaysia. Don't buy, because everything is, they want it fast. They want fast fashion. You just wear it for a few days and then you don't like it, then you throw it away.
They want you to make it for them.
Yeah, but when it's something that you made yourself, you will have to bring your love, your effort, your time, and then you have a bigger appreciation for your own product.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's something that we want to cultivate here in Malaysia.
As for the actual components, where do they come from? Are they specific branded components? For example, for the rhinestones, what are we looking at?
No, they're all generic. If you compare our rhinestones with the ones you see in the stores, on the sweaters, on the skirts, on the jeans, they're actually the same.
Right.
Yeah.
And where do you purchase them from?
Some locally, some overseas.
Right. We like to make our wholesalers diverse. And we pick and choose. So we test our products to see whether it can last for a while, you know, before we start selling them.
Yeah. And I actually just came back from Cambodia, where I met artisans. Met a gemologist who sold me really beautiful natural raw crystals, and I also met with another Australian lady who is training the locals how to make clay beads.
Okay.
Yes, everything is handmade and it's hand painted. So yeah, I just got a small sample back, so we will be releasing them soon. So hopefully in the future we will be able to work with fair trade products and supplies. So because it's a win-win. It's a win for us, it's a win for our customers, and it's a win for our suppliers whose workers are actually paid decent wages.
Would you work with local artisans as well, since we also have a bit of a culture tradition when it comes to making beads?
Yeah, definitely. We do have some small amount of tribal beads from Sarawak, but we're still working on our designs for that.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so from, rhinestones to more ethnic kind of looks, does it mean that DIYKL also evolves in its looks when it comes to jewellery, or is there a certain aesthetic that you work towards?
Well, I think for DIYKL, we don't want to limit ourselves to a certain style or a certain type of fashion. So we are going through all angles. Right now, it could probably be more rhinestones. It would be a bit more glamorous, more fashionable. We may go on to a bit more bohemian, more tribal, more ethnic. And we'll see where our style goes. Yeah.
Will it just be accessories? Would you venture into other things?
Yeah, we're thinking of definitely venturing into other things. I mean, we've had men come to us saying, Look, guys, we're all the DIY kids for men.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you make this like more manly for us? Because we don't want sparkly things. Yeah, yeah. We do have customers.
So more of leather, steel, yeah. I imagine. Right. Yeah. Are you hoping to spark off, you know, I suppose an entrepreneurial spirit for people who start making jewelry on their own? Maybe they can start their own line of jewelry. Is that what you're hoping to do as well?
Yeah, why not? I mean, because again, DIYing is a culture. It's not just a hobby. Even our website, we actually made it from scratch. We did it all ourselves. Photography, the coding, payment gateways and registration. Because
the copywriting.
Everything. Because
we did it ourselves.
Where did you learn all these skills?
For me, I have
Google.
Google is one. Right. Very important. A lot of tutorials and articles. Another thing is I have a background in electronics engineering. So we do have some coding courses. So that was a big help.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So you know, definitely a DIY spirit that you have there. Yeah. Where are you hoping to take DIY KL the next year? Is it something that you're just doing as on the side, or are you hoping to make it bigger and better and faster?
Well, the thing is for us is we both have our own day jobs, and that's really important for us. But we're happy to have DIY KL as an outlet for creativity. Of course, we want to see it grow bigger and not just something on the side. So we have a few plans up our sleeves. We can't really reveal them all right now.
Right.
But you'll know first.
Okay.
If we have anything.
So if anyone wants to find out more and look at the designs that you have, where can they find out?
Okay, they can look for us at DIYKL.com. Our store is there, our tutorials are there, and our contact information are all there.
And that was this week's Style Makers, Saren Mutang and Agnes Leong from DIY KL. Coming up next, Maitan Abdullah and I will be going for what's made headlines in the fashion industry. Before that though, here's Gooey, the Gilligan Moss remix by Glass Animals, and this was played at Tory Burch's Spring 2015 collection in Milan. This is Style File, BFM 89.9. This is Style File on BFM 89.9, bringing fashion to you over the airwaves. I'm Azura Rahman. It's time for Style Scoop with Maitan Abdullah. For our first story for this week, a rather interesting piece that came out in the New York Times, Maya. It's about Western designers finally cottoning on to Ramadan. Now, this is a piece by the New York Times, like I mentioned, and they stated that as far back as 2012, Euromonitor International, a market research firm, took note that like Christmas, a religious context serves as a reason for families and friends to come together, and a typical Ramadan consumer is likely to emerge in the same way as the Christmas shopper as a global phenomenon. And they have seen the trickle-down effects of this, of where Net-a-Porter, Tommy Hilfiger, Moda Operandi have all come up with their own Ramadan offerings this year. What do you think of this story?
I don't know. My question is, why only now? I guess globalization has brought this on. But I can't help but feel a little bit exploited, you know, like, oh, they've caught on that the Middle East is a huge market, that we need new clothes every year, and now they're cashing in.
Yeah, especially when you think about it, you know, that the whole premise of Ramadan is not just fasting from food, but also, you know, to be a bit more inward reflective and, you know, fasting from other things like shopping as well. But
consumerism, I guess, learning to do without, being more considerate, I suppose.
But I guess the market forces shows otherwise, right? Because there's always a spike, not so much for Ramadan, but because we're preparing for Hari Raya, for Eid, right? And it's something that we've already seen on our shores every single year, the Raya rush. And it's interesting to see how the West is kind of, you know, copying and latching on to that trend.
Yeah, you were telling me about Net-a-Porter and how they had the Ramadan edit.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at the visuals of that, you know, it was set against a desert landscape and kaftans and things like that. If you're going to cash in on us, you know, I'm looking forward to new definitions of modest without the ethnic baggage or preconceived ideas. You know, give us fresh and turn it into a worldwide trend, right?
It is very kind of hackneyed, like the ideas. You've got like kaftans and you've got very ethnic looking jewellery.
Jubas and stuff.
Yes, exactly. And there were some instances where you can see that they were trying to make do with tops that seemed a bit more modest and how they can actually make it presentable for Ramadan. Interestingly enough, Tommy Hilfiger itself has come up with a line specifically for Ramadan, but only for the Middle Eastern consumers. So you can only find it in the Middle East. But it'll be nice to see how they can rejuvenate and refresh everyday staples like how we see it here in Malaysia, you know, on Fashion Valley. LA, for example, if you were to go to their Muslimah selection, you've got blouses, you've got skirts, you've got, you know, denim shirts, you've got jeans.
You've got turbans.
Exactly.
New ways to meet that
Modest requirement, right?
Exactly. And in that sense, I guess Malaysian designers have got a head start in terms of innovation because they've been taking trends from the runway. For example, peplums, the use of neoprene fabrics, which we have some reservations about. Yes. But then again, you know, they've got a head start in innovating, and I'm really looking forward to what comes out of the West in that sense. Because the upside is, I guess, we have wider options now, and perhaps it will also up the game as far as Malaysian designers are concerned.
Absolutely. I think for so long, Malaysian designers have really cottoned on to Ramadan, or more like, you know, Hari Raya being their Christmas. You cannot be a self-respecting designer without a Raya line, for example, because that's when you get to cash in. And if you wanted to buy a fancy juba or a fancy, you know, baju, you'll have to turn to designers like, you know, Rizalman and your Shaiful Bahrims and so on and so on. And to know that there are now options by Oscar de la Renta and Derek Lam and Stella McCartney, they will also be reaching for that same dollar, right? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see where this trend will lead. Like you said, choices is always a good thing.
Yeah, but because we are seasoned consumers when it comes to shopping for Ramadan, I think our expectations of the West are way higher. So yes, step it up. You want to cash in on us? Step it up.
Well, we'll see then. Ramadan 2016. It could be a new season altogether when you think about it, right?
Oh, no.
For our next story for this week, not so fashionable health hazards. An article in the UK Telegraph has outlined the health hazards one faces when wearing some current trends. It's quite an interesting one. And then I've picked out three of the health hazards of the current trends that you see on a daily basis. Of course, skinny jeans being the first one. I think it's one thing for it to, you know, kind of cut off circulation when it's a bit too tight, but apparently when it's combined with squats, it can lead to nerve damage. It sounds very, very serious. Basically, a lady in Australia had been moving house with her friend, and she was squatting for long periods of time in her skinny jeans, and she was found collapsed on the ground, unable to get up when her feet and ankles became numb due to nerve damage from squatting for long periods in skinny jeans. Sounds serious.
Who knew that skinny jeans were so damaging?
So lethal.
Yeah.
You know, apart from muffin tops.
And you know, most skinny jeans nowadays have stretch to it. I think she may have gone with like full denim and maybe four sizes too small. You know, this brings a new definition to the term fashion victim, which has been around for a while, right?
Yes, right. I mean, this is a literal translation of that. The other possible fashion victim is someone who's been carrying their handbag in their arm hook crook. Basically, Victoria Beckham was known to spark off this trend, right? Maybe like circa 10 years ago when really, really big bags were de rigueur. And carrying those big bags, statement bags, your Birkins and whatnots in the crook of your hand can also lead to torn muscles and tendon damage. Especially when you fill it up, I suppose, right? The bigger the bag, the more things you put in it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I myself have been a victim of the big bag trend, you know, which has been carrying on for quite a few years. My shoulders are definitely misaligned. One is higher than the other.
I understand, Maya. And that's why I find the new micro bag trend a complete relief, right? The less you carry, the less damage you'll be doing to your shoulders, the less damage you'll be doing to your arms. You really don't need much more than your handphone and, you know, some spare change, right?
Yeah, it's a good philosophy to have for life in general, you know, less baggage. Less is more.
Yes, absolutely. And the final injury that they actually highlighted, which is quite an obvious one, high heels and pointed toe shoes. You would think bunions, for example, but in this case, they pointed out Morton's neuroma, which is basically the nerve that runs between the toes that can be affected when you're wearing high heel shoes over 2 inches. So, you know, when you think high heels, in today's terms, you think 5 inches, right? This is over 2 inches, which is quite matronly when you think about it.
Yeah, and then when you think about the platforms and the 5-inch heels, you know, you wonder what kind of damage you're doing to yourself. It forces you to walk in a certain way. There are a lot of girls who are enamored with the idea of having height, you know, but they don't realize that when they walk, they actually look like they're in pain, or they look like
they're on stilts.
On stilts, or they have, you know, physical impairments. And I think the thing about fashion is that it's always been about altering the status quo, being larger than life, defying gravity or logic. The more outrageous, the better it is, the more different, the more outstanding. But it looks like fashion sense is something people can cultivate, but common sense is apparently harder to find.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it comes to these things, you've got to look at what suits you. Don't just follow the trend. Find your own chic and own it and tell people that that's your thing. I have very wide feet. I think,
I know,
catching on to the yoga trend, I think Asians in general have broader feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so flats actually suit me more, even though I don't have a lot of height. But you know, you've got to go with what you're comfortable with, because if you're uncomfortable when you're totally decked out in top-to-toe designer, it still doesn't work.
It just makes you think the next time you see someone in skinny jeans with a heavy handbag and high heels, she's an accident waiting to happen. She's already a fashion victim in some ways, I suppose. So.
Completely. There's also one interesting aspect which I learned about when I did an interview yesterday. I interviewed someone about Generation Z or Gen Z, and these are 10 to 20-year-olds. For them, authenticity is key. So I think you should just be yourself, even if you don't have a particular look or a particular style. So be it. You know, I think increasingly it's becoming more accepted and more valued. With Gen Z, for example, they make up 30% of the entire consumer pool around the world. So they're very influential. And for them, being authentic and being real is key. So in the future, I can see that more and more, there'll be a big rejection of all things contrived mm-hmm. and contorted. And my advice is, be real, don't squeeze yourself into a fashion injury.
Fewer fashion victims, perhaps. We'll see about that too. Now for our final story for this week, the latest accessory in fashion, the law. Now, of course, when it comes to fashion, you've got IP issues, copycat issues, fair employment issues. So you'd think, you know, why has it taken so long for a course in fashion law to take shape? And it's just as recent as Monday, we have the Fordham University School of Law in the United States have announced what it calls the first degrees in fashion law. They're offering an LLM, a Master of Law in Fashion, for lawyers who want to focus on the fashion industry, and a Master of Studies in Law, an MSL, for non-lawyers who work in fashion and want some grounding in the legal field. Very timely, not to say timely, I think it's high time for this to happen. Don't you think so, Maya?
Yeah, it's about time. Things like copyright, IP, fair wage, sweatshops, all of that could have benefited from some sort of precedence. And nowadays, people are even copywriting phrases such as YOLO mm-hmm. and this beat is sick. It's just going to get more and more complicated. Also, as technology changes things and disrupts the way fashion works, it'll be even more tricky. For example, last week we were talking about the company Knitten that allows individuals to program knitting machines to print a sweater for one person. And then there are 3D printers.
Absolutely.
And people can create stuff outside of official environments. So what happens then? And then there's the whole thing with e-commerce and online shopping, security and big data. Also, what happens with laws for privacy when promotions can pop up on your phone because you're near a fashion store, or when your moisturizer expires and your card is automatically charged and you're sent a new bottle without you doing anything? All that is well and good when it goes as planned, but there will be anomalies that arise and the law is going to have to deal with all of that.
You know, the thing is, you also have designers who've lost their names, for example, right? People like Hervé Légère, people like John Galliano, who have names to a label, but it doesn't belong to them anymore because of, you know, severed business partnerships, for example. And then you as a designer, you find that you no longer own your name, or you can't even design in your name. And if such designers were actually equipped with the information on how they can protect themselves under the law before signing anything on the dotted line, then perhaps it would have been a very different story. So, you know, it's not just about copyright issues. It's not just about, you know, copycats. It's also just about people being able to carry on doing business, carry
protecting
on designing
themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's great. You know, I wish this course was actually available when I was practicing law.
Would
have a very different career.
Law.
Yeah, exactly. And it was interesting to see whether there'll be more fashionable lawyers. We've got Amal Clooney, perhaps, you know, shining that beacon of, you know, the hot and sexy lawyer. Maybe you have more of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right after the break, we have Emma Chong Johnston, editor-in-chief of tongsheet.com, will be giving her verdict on the latest fashion trend. It's Azura Rahman on Stylefile BFM 89.9. And next up, we have Emma Chong Johnston from tongsheet.com. And she reckons going all white is all right. it's summer, I suppose, in some parts of the world. All whites, that can be more apt, right, for this time of the year?
Yes, all whites are back. I think all whites make an appearance kind of every summer, but this time they're back in a big way. Also because there was the whole winter whites trend, which is kind of just trickled on. But yeah, all white, head to toe, difficult look, but it looks really good if you can pull it off.
I guess it depends on what you're wearing that's actually all white. Like an all white suit is always going to be a bit tricky if you're not Bianca Jagger, right?
Yeah.
But what are we looking at in terms of all whites, in terms of the pieces that we should be looking out for?
Well, I mean, earlier this year and also like last year, there was that kind of resurgence of the little white dress rather than the little black dress as a kind of all occasion piece. And I'm like all about the little white dress. But this year it's been a bit more, there's been a lot of white formal wear. I think you'll have noticed it in like the Raya collections. There were a lot of all white pieces. Which are really beautiful, but yeah, difficult. And yeah, so I think there's been that kind of turning back to all white as a kind of evening formal look, which is very interesting.
So are we looking at something a bit more structured or something a bit more soft in terms of the silhouettes?
There's been a lot of chiffon around. Embroidery is still really big as well. Embroidery was a big trend last year. Still hanging around. Obviously, it's like perfect for summer. And then also you have like all the 70s things like the crochet, the white denim flares, things like that. So it's really like a mixture of structured and softer pieces.
Okay, what would be your perfect all-white ensemble then?
I love little white dresses, especially lacy ones. I think I really like broderie for dresses because it has that lacy vibe, but it's not so princessy and precious. In my mind, it's a bit tougher. I also really like the idea of kind of white culottes with a white top as well. And then maybe a black shoe if you're going to be daring. But yeah, I think the white suit is a cool option if you're brave enough to wear it. I mean, I think a suit is always going to look different and it also kicks it up a notch if you make it all white. So
when you're saying all white, is there a certain shade that we're looking at? Because we know there are different shades. Or should we be monotone about it? Or can we mix creams and whites perhaps?
I always think mixing creams and whites looks really weird, but it is a much more wearable way of doing things. You can seg into the all whites trends with off whites. I think that's a much easier way of doing it rather than those like kind of bright, almost blue-toned whites, because those are so much more difficult to keep clean as well. I think if you're really going to go for the all-white thing, I think you need a really like crisp, pure white, like shining, bright white kind of thing. But on a day-to-day basis, like an off-white or a cream or even like ivory, it's much
more
wearable.
To break out the bleach then.
Yes.
What about your grooming? Should you be wary of certain things when you're wearing an all-white ensemble?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to kind of like let it slip down that kind of like boho 70s look. But I think the much more modern way of doing it is keeping everything else really neat and like, you know, slicked back hair, like simple shoes, like maybe avoid the kind of 70s platform look, that kind of really simple strappy belly there sandal, things like that.
That was this week's episode of Style File. If you've missed any parts of the show, don't forget to catch up with our podcast from www.bfm.my, and don't forget to like our Facebook page Style File on BFM 89.9. Before we go though, we leave you with We Are the Youth by Electric Youth, and this was played at Tory Burch's Spring 2015 collection in Milan. This is Azura Rahman on Style File BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.